Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and you are listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the privilege to travel last week through the Rocky Mountain State with our Vice President of Stewardship, Mr. George Courtney. We were there to meet with many of our longtime members and leaders, as well as a few of their spouses. We met in some of their homes and met others in coffee shops. And it was during a spectacular fall season for Colorado. I just wanted to say a special thanks to one of our long-term VIP members, Dr. Walt and his wife, Barb Larimore. They were wonderful hosts in Colorado Springs for a couple of days while we were there. Walt recounted for me the history of how he worked with CMDA leadership in the early 90s to develop the first teaching curriculum for integrating faith into a medical or dental practice that they called initially Saline Solution. And Walt gave his support and is so pleased with the efforts to release our new Faith Prescriptions teaching series, which is available on our Learning Center today, free for our members. You know, from the Larimore's backyard, Pike's Peak was cast in the most amazing sunrise pink hues. And I got pictures on my phone that my wife Pam thinks could be used on postcards for the Tourism Bureau in Colorado. I'm also very grateful for some of our CMDA members who met with us last week, including Barbara, Mark, Matthew, Neil, Bill, Dennis, Don, Peter, as well as a great friend of CMDA, Mr. John Stone Street, who's the executive director of the Colson Center. He took time out of his busy schedule to join George and me for lunch near his headquarters in Colorado Springs. Well, today on CMDA Matters, I'm joined by Dr. Warren Yamashita and Dr. Kurt Bravada. Between the two of them, they have quite the list of credentials with their work in addiction medicine. Dr. Yamashita is a family medicine and addiction medicine physician who recently graduated from the Stanford Addiction Fellowship. He's currently at KCS Federally Qualified Health Center in Anaheim, California, providing family medicine, addiction medicine, integrated behavioral health, and homeless services. He's also a Stanford Addiction Medicine Fellowship adjunct instructor, where he leads their diversity, equity, and inclusion didactics within a biblical framework. He also serves on CMDA's Racism, Reconciliation, Equality, and Diversity Committee, which seeks to address the ethnic and racial disparities in the U.S. with a biblical worldview. Dr. Bravada felt called to share God's grace by helping to lead people out of lives of deeply rooted hurt, dysfunction, and addiction. As a family physician, Dr. Bravada responded to the need for effective evidence-based treatment of substance use disorders in his rural patient population. Well, this growing passion led my guest, Dr. Bravada, to seek education in addiction medicine, and he eventually obtained addiction medicine board certification through the practice pathway provided by the American Board of Preventive Medicine. Along the way, Kurt has been involved in local and national family and addiction medicine leadership education, as well as publication. Well, they're both joining me today on the podcast from their respective offices in California and Missouri to talk about their work in addiction medicine and to introduce you to CMDA's new addiction medicine section. So I want to invite you to sit back, listen in to our recent conversation. Well, you just heard some impressive credentials in a couple of bios of my guest today, and I want to welcome both Dr. Kurt Bravada as well as Dr. Warren Yamashita, who have been working together to prepare an application to our Board of Trustees for the newest section, specialty section of CMDA, which is an addiction medicine section. So welcome to the program today, Kurt and Warren.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners, how did you get involved in addiction medicine in addition to all the other primary care responsibilities that you've had and been trained in?
So I was trained in residency at Bronx Lebanon Hospital Center in New York, and had a lot of experience seeing patients who had multiple medical comorbidities and behavioral health issues and were suffering with coinciding addiction. At that time, I did not get any additional certification in addiction treatment. But when I came out to rural Southwest Missouri to take my current job with family medicine and focus on geriatrics, I started to have a high number of patients that were seeking opioids, and soon discovered that there was no local addiction recovery program where I could send those that were determined to have a problem with opioid dependence. And so I started providing some addiction recovery services for my patients using injectable Depo naltrexone, and found that that was an easy way to get started down the road. Started recognizing that there was a bigger problem, that, you know, we really needed to meet the needs of all the addiction suffering patients in the area, and contacted our administration at my hospital system here at Citizens Memorial Healthcare. And through the help of my wife, who is skilled in administration and grant writing, we were able to put together a proposal and set up an addiction recovery program. And I also, at that time, I studied for my addiction medicine boards, which I was able to take through the practice pathway, which allows providers that have training and experience in addiction medicine through their practice to be able to become board certified in addiction medicine without having to do a separate fellowship.
Great. Warren, tell us your story.
Yeah, well, some of our listeners may not be aware that addiction medicine is now a board certified or an accredited board specialty under the American Board of Preventive Medicine since 2017. And for me, I came into addiction medicine through the fellowship pathway. So for me, I just graduated from Stanford's addiction medicine fellowship, and I'm also a family medicine physician as well. But I'd say that during my family medicine training, I did not set out to pursue addiction medicine. In fact, I did my family medicine residency in rural Hilo, Hawaii. And it was there seeing really the lack of addiction care and the great need for it. And even just throughout my medical education, what I would say even more of a stigmatized education on treating patients with addiction. I developed that call and that passion over time, working with patients that were just struggling through a very broken healthcare system, which each case. And then it was really getting involved with the foster youth care in the community. I was doing a number of talks in the community on improving our care for the foster youth and our child welfare services systems. And what I saw on the, I'm a really big picture person. And so I was, you know, presenting the data in Hawaii and nationally on the prevalence of foster youth. And for me, looking at that graph just hit me. What I saw there was just a rise in foster youth prevalence since the beginning of the nation to 1997. And then it went down after the adoption of Safe Families Act, which pushed towards reunification plans. But then it nadired about in 2012 in Hawaii and nationally, and has started to tick back up. Every state that you talk to says it's because of substance use, particularly parental substance use. That's one of the main factors driving that rise. And just seeing that impact on families, me, was very visceral, which told me that this was something that I can really devote a lifetime to.
And Warren, a number of our members got to hear you at the national convention in a breakout session, I believe, talking about both addiction medicine and racism, because those are two areas where you're contributing a great deal to CMDA, are you not?
Yeah, definitely two ginormous issues. I actually got to present that type of presentation at the National Fellowship Didactics to my fellow addiction medicine fellow colleagues, talking about how ingrained these stigmas are with race and addiction. And really, you know, it's important for us to remember the spiritual warfare that's behind a lot of this.
Well, Kurt, as I've traveled around and spoken in various banquets and sat at tables and asked them what they're doing now, I've actually been surprised by the number of different specialists who've said, you know, I was delivering babies for 10 years in OBGYN, and I decided there were just so many addicted patients in my practice, I decided to get some training, and now I do full-time addictionology among obstetrics. What are all the specialists that you've come across who've kind of done something like that, or at least part-time taking care of addicted patients?
Yeah, so it's really amazing. I really think we're seeing a wave of this kind of paradigm shift of local physicians in their practice providing addiction care you know, either on the side or as a, you know, increasing part of their practice. And so, you know, definitely I would say that there's a big push for this within my specialty, family medicine, and even residency programs for family medicine and internal medicine are actually requiring addiction training. And many of them are graduating with their DATA 2000 certification for prescribing buprenorphine. We were seeing ER doctors getting training so that they can be the ones to initiate buprenorphine for addiction care. Of course, psychiatrists have been doing this forever, but we're seeing anesthesiologists and pain management doctors. And then we're seeing, you know, non-medical professionals. We're seeing people in the behavioral health community. We're seeing, you know, counselors getting involved. And of course, you know, these are not people that are prescribing medications, but they're providing counseling services. And we're seeing people that are involved in alternative therapies, people in the religious community. We're even seeing chiropractors that are providing addiction care. And, you know, there's so many different levels of this, and people have so many different ideas about how to provide addiction care. Definitely, it's great to see so many different professionals getting involved.
So we keep hearing on a daily basis, it dominates the narrative in the secular and religious media for the past few years about this increasing problem of addiction. So from your perspective, Kurt, how bad is the problem right now? And are there stats or data that just might blow away our listeners' minds, even our healthcare professionals who see it from time to time?
Yeah, so I'll speak briefly just about my program here, and then Warren has some of the national statistics there that I think you'd like to discuss. But we have seen, you know, especially with the pandemic, you know, over the last year, that we've actually seen a 50% rise in patients seeking addiction care. And so in half a year, we had seen more patients than we'd seen all last year. And so it's really, really incredible. The need was there, but it's really grown. And part of the reason for that is that people are spending more time at home. There's a lot more hopelessness out there, a lot more joblessness. People who are spending more time at home are becoming aware of family members who are suffering from addiction that before it was kind of happening behind the scenes, you know, while they were away at work. We're having people who are, you know, being home more and now are self-medicating more. And definitely the stress of everything that, you know, people have gone through and just the uncertainty of the times has increased the prevalence of addiction. And we're just so glad to see these so many of these patients coming in for care. So I'll hand it off to Warren for some of the other statistics.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. And it's really great to hear the work that you're doing over with your practice.
Thank you.
So as many of us are aware, we're going through an opioid epidemic. But in the addiction medicine world, we really describe us being in the fourth wave of an opioid epidemic, starting with the prescription opioid rise in the 80s, 90s, and then moving on to the heroin wave epidemic, to then fentanyl, IV fentanyl. And now what we're seeing is we're really in this fourth wave of the opioid crisis, where we're seeing overdoses on people's urine drug screens. In those cases, we're seeing that they have multiple substances. So we really see that we're in this polysubstance opioid epidemic where people are overdosing on combination of things like stimulants, methamphetamine, and fentanyl. Even cases where I've had a patient that never used fentanyl relapse on methamphetamine after many years of abstinence. It was contaminated with fentanyl and he overdosed on fentanyl, came into the hospital, luckily was revived with Narcan. But it surprised me to find out that 1 in 6 Americans have some substance use disorder, and that's including nicotine use disorder, alcohol, as well as stimulants, methamphetamines, sedative hypnotics as well. So 1 in 6. In fact, I was just looking at the trends during the pandemic, and what we saw from 2019 through 2020 was a 30% rise in opioid overdoses. So 91,000 deaths in America from opioid overdoses in the year of 2020. We actually saw a 50% rise in just substance use amongst Americans increase during this pandemic. So really rise in those diseases of despair. You know, when you really think about the impact of addiction and we think about the long-term effects, especially from alcohol and smoking, such as cardiovascular disease, severe COPD, even cancers, addiction really does, as a disease, account for the greatest contributor of death in America. You know, just to put in perspective, those 91,000 deaths in 2020, when I was looking at the motor vehicle deaths, there was 38,000 deaths. So you're 3 times more likely to have a loved one pass and die from overdosing on opioids than dying from a car crash.
I want to appreciate and let our listeners know that we have a CMDA Go app, which was released several months ago. And without question, the busiest forum on that app, and it's still relatively new, but have been coming as a result of you two gentlemen and the activity and communication that you've been doing back and forth and trying to get our members excited, interested in a new addiction medicine section. It would be our 14th section of CMDA. So what inspired you and what are your goals for this new section? I can guess several, but I'd like to hear it from the two men who've launched this.
I've been very involved with the American Academy of Family Physicians and with my local state section for the Missouri Academy of Family Physicians. And, you know, I started to feel impressed by God that it was time for change and that there were some other things that he wanted me to do and that I needed to open up my schedule. You know, so I started to make some changes and take some things off my plate and stepped back from the local Missouri Academy of Family Physicians. And I'm still involved, but not as much and still very involved with the AAFP. But I just felt impressed by God to get more involved with the CMDA. So I contacted CMDA and I said, I'd really like to get involved in your addiction medicine section. And discovered that we didn't have one yet. And it's not really that surprising because, you know, this is a new field, even though addiction medicine as a concept has existed forever as a subspecialty, it's a new field. So I contacted CMDA and I said, well, you know, since we don't have a section, what do we need to do to get one set up? And so I heard like my wife's voice in the back of my head, like, I thought you said you were going to take a step back, but I just knew it was the right thing to do. I just felt that God was encouraging me to do it. And so they put me in touch with Warren Yamashita and, you know, he was in his fellowship over there at Stanford and, you know, we just hit it right off and started just having such amazing conversations and started getting the ball rolling and then inviting other people to get involved. And we got involved on the CMDA Go app where we had a forum and we're getting conversation going and it was generating interest. Then we began the process of seeing how we could set up a section and what, you know, the application process is, how to set up the bylaws and, you know, what the different positions and roles were. And the thing took off and we have people from around the country that have gotten involved and we have just submitted our application. And so it is super exciting.
Warren, anything to add to that in terms of your personal hopes and dreams, vision for this section?
Yeah. Thanks, Kurt, for just sharing that story of just how those conversations started. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the Buffalo, New York team over there, Dr. Holmes, Dr. Caparasso, and so many others that we've met who are just doing great work with their University of Buffalo Addiction Medicine section, their CMD Embrace Recovery Ministry, and many others that we met in Florida, others in California. What I've just loved is the community that's developed. And I think, Kurt, I love the way you phrase it. You know, I know that these are lifelong friendships that we've forged in just the last 4 months. That being said, as we started to meet and brainstorm what are our priorities for this section and what do we want to write down and make canon in the bylaws, we wrote down the purpose of the section. And so I think it'd be a good time just to share that we wrote down to rise with Christ and by his power excel in these areas. So those areas follow the acronym RISE: research, inspire, serve, and educate. I'll just consolidate our paragraph, but research is really supporting addiction medicine research for learning more about the disease of addiction across the whole biopsychosocial spiritual model. Inspire is to inspire just the broader recovery community, any stakeholder in this field of addiction, which, you know, addiction hits almost every family in America, to encourage the healthcare professionals, pastors, theologians, even recovery specialists to network, co-labor in the ministry of addiction medicine and addiction ministry together. Serve, which is the third, is to provide excellent addiction care, not only as clinicians, but also as the church. And lastly, educate is to continue to educate new learners coming through, educating the community, educating families on what addiction is and what treatments are available, but also bridging some of the communication between the church and the medical community, which sometimes has different views of what addiction is and how to treat it from a full biblical biopsychosocial spiritual model of addiction.
How do you think that Christian healthcare professionals can become more involved as change agents in helping our communities. Kurt has talked about making a difference where he is, communities in our medical system to improve care for our patients who are facing addiction. I think that we as Christians in healthcare are very well equipped because with thinking of whole person, adding spiritual care, psychosocial care, as you've mentioned, how would you challenge our listeners that they can become more involved in this epidemic?
You know, I would say, you know, specifically because as CMD, our Christian healthcare community, really first communing with God in prayer and really leaning in, because I am a firm believer that each one of us were born in this time, in this place for a specific call mm-hmm. on our lives. And if that call is addiction care, then to follow God at every step of the way, full steam ahead. But if he's calling you to work on this other area of need in ministry and in medicine, you know, pursue that with just knowing that the Son of God is walking alongside you. And then, you know, on a more practical level, you know, how to get involved. Well, I would say on some level, all healthcare professionals need to get involved because addiction is a disease, like we mentioned earlier. Addiction overdoses and sequela of addictions is the leading cause of death in America. And so in many ways, not getting involved is not an option. And really the fellowships were designed by the boards for that purpose, is to send out change agents into every healthcare institution. But, you know, why not CMDA raising our hand and taking that lead in our institutions? Yeah, let's start there.
Kurt, that's such an important question. Anything you'd add to what Warren has shared?
You know, I just think that as believers, we have an obligation to treat the whole person, you know, body, mind, and spirit. And in our practices, to integrate that into how we approach each and every patient. I think addiction is just such a great opportunity to do that because these patients are so open to help. You know, they've hit rock bottom. They recognize their need. And at the time that somebody comes in seeking addiction care, they're ready for help. So many of us have, you know, experience with people who may not be at that point yet, but once you open that door to providing addiction care, you start having the patients come in that are ready. And so that's your opportunity to share the love of God with them and to meet them at the point of their need and to be non-judgmental and to put aside any biases that you may have and to really just provide them with exposure to the heart of God. And I think that as believers, you know, that shines through us when we allow ourselves to be open vessels to be used for his plans and purposes.
You know, Warren, back at the National Convention, you talked in your talk about stigma. How prevalent is stigma even among Christians in healthcare who are taking care of patients? And what can we do to fight that stigma these days?
You know, like any stigma, the best way to combat stigma is with truth, right? With knowledge. And fortunately, over the last couple of decades, we've been learning more about the brain, particularly the neurobiology of addiction from leading researchers such as Volkow and Kub and many others, which have helped us learn more about the mechanisms of addiction and really to understand the disease of addiction. I think talking to patients about how at a certain point in the disease development, they really lose control of their ability to remain abstinent without increasing their care, adding medications and further support. It's really important to know as clinicians, because if we don't recognize that, you know, addiction is one of what's called like a disease of agency, it's really easy to get frustrated with the patient and even blame a patient. And the more we understand something, really the less judgment there is. And sure. We can really to welcome a patient in who, you know, has been turned away from so many other people and just start a relationship and get them into treatment.
What can Christians in general do to help and not enable?
You know, definitely it starts with, you know, recognizing the biases, you know, that we might have as individuals and the stigmas that we might apply, you know, because as Christians, you know, we believe so strongly in the transformative power of God that, you know, so often we're believing for the miraculous and the complete 100% turnaround that we know that can be attained through Christ Jesus. But I think that through education, you know, we can help our Christian colleagues and, you know, people in the religious community understand about the neurobiology of addiction and how difficult that it is from a physiological perspective, from an emotional perspective, a psychological perspective, to break those habits and those chemical dependencies. And so I think that once the church understands that, then they can, without bias, be able to provide love and acceptance to those who are suffering from addiction, and to be there for them as a safety net when they do slip up, recognizing that addiction is a remitting and relapsing disease. Because of that, we need to think of this as a longitudinal process where we are following those people, you know, lifelong, and not giving up on them when they slip up, and not making them feel like they have failed, and also not making them feel like because they are on medications for addiction treatment, that they are somehow substituting one drug for another. Once we understand the concept of harm reduction, we realize that when you break the cycle of drug-seeking behavior and patients are no longer trying to get the drugs on the street, when they are starting to take care of their families, they're starting to show up to work, they're starting to go to their doctor's appointments and take care of their health, that is transformation. For people who have been down and out, that is transformation. And, you know, maybe eventually they can be, you know, 100% without having to take medications. But while they're in this process of transition and recovery, we need to support them every step of the way and just provide the love of God.
Well, as we come down the home stretch here, how can people get involved with the new medicine section? Certainly your leadership, you're requiring membership within CMDA. We want everyone who's listening to be a member of CMDA. But how can they get involved, plugged in, and be a part of this discussion? Iron sharpening iron, healthcare professionals trying to deal with this massive problem that, as you put in some materials that I saw that you put together, that CMDA is in a good place to actually make a big difference today.
You know, of course, going to the CMDA website, you know, you can contact this CMDA directly or through the CMDA app. The CMDA Go app has the addiction medicine section forum, which has become very active, and you can communicate directly with Warren and I and others who are involved in this section. We're launching a new section on the website for the addiction medicine section, and so we'll have all of our contact information on there, and you know, what our areas of focus are, and you know, we'd love to hear from you. And we are also having monthly meetings, and sometimes more than once a month, because we have our planning meetings, program development meetings, and we have our prayer meetings, where we seek the heart of God on how we're to go forward and what his vision is for this addiction medicine section. And I know Warren had some thoughts on this as well.
Go ahead, Warren.
Yeah, we also just wanted to mention just the different ways that clinicians can become board certified in addiction medicine, and just to review those. So one is the practice pathway, that if you're practicing addiction medicine, you can get grandfathered in, and the deadline has been extended to 2025. And that's what pathway Kurt took. And then for me, I took the fellowship pathway. So doing a addiction medicine fellowship, and then you become eligible to take the board exam that way as well. You don't need to become board certified to get started in addiction medicine. Really, the first step we want to encourage everyone is to get X waivered, and then to reach out to someone in your community. You can reach out to me or Kurt on just talking through, you know, how do you start a Suboxone induction? You know, how do I get started with, you know, my first patient in these areas? And for many of you, you're doing a lot of this already in your practices. The other thing is, we want to just really emphasize our vision for the upcoming section of being really multidisciplinary, clinicians, churches, peer recovery specialists, because we know that only 1 in 10 patients with addiction or people with addiction in America come to the healthcare system. So 9 in 10 people suffering from addiction will never interact with the doctor. And for that, we do need the church on the ground. And so we do really want this section to be all hands on deck.
Well, my wonderful predecessors, Dr. David Stevens and Dr. Gene Rudd, shared with me that history tells us that the specialty sections that were started by someone feeling a call and a desire to make a difference, like both of you physicians, are the sections that took off. And I think the sky is the limit for the addiction medicine section of CMDA. Thank you for your service. And I have a feeling we're going to be getting some feedback from our listeners on CMDA Matters. God bless you both in these endeavors.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope that many of you listening will take the opportunity to get involved with this new addiction medicine section of CMDA. If God is calling you to be a leading change agent in this battle against addiction, as well as the stigmas that surround addiction, be sure to visit cmda.org/AMS, or you can email them directly at ams@cmda.org. Plus, you can start chatting directly with both Dr. Bravada and Dr. Yamashita through the CMDA Go app. You can download the app in your device's app store today. Dr. Yamashita touched on something I want to point out, and that's the importance of learning more about addiction in order to better understand it as a disease. If you listened to last week's episode of CMDA Matters, you heard Dr. Brick Lance sharing about the new Bridging the Gap small group study. Well, one of the modules in Bridging the Gap focuses specifically on addiction. So I encourage you to visit cmda.org/bridgingthegap, one word, to download this free resource and get started learning more about how to help those who are suffering from addiction. And don't forget, this new addiction medicine section joins a growing list of specialty sections that give our members, just like you, the unique opportunity to equip, network, and fellowship with colleagues in your specific specialty. Organized by CMDA members, these sections provide a wealth of resources for those who wish to connect with their colleagues. We now have 14 specialty sections, including psychiatry, dermatology, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and many more. You can find a list of all these specialty sections at cmda.org/specialty sections. If your specialty isn't on the list, then I hope you will contact CMDA's campus and community ministries at ccm@cmda.org for more information about how you and others with you can start a new section for your particular specialty. Well, speaking of finding connections with your colleagues in CMDA, I want you to mark your calendars for the 2022 CMDA National Convention. We will be in Indianapolis, Indiana on April 21st to 24th, 2022. After more than 2 years of connecting with you virtually, this is going to be an incredible chance for us to finally be together again. And that's our theme, Together Again, to find renewal, refreshment, and revival. One of our plenary speakers is Professor Carl Truman, the author of The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self. And he was a guest on CMDA Matters earlier this year, one of our most listened to interviews. Plus, you'll also hear from Dallas Jenkins, the creator and director of The Chosen TV series. Lila Rose, the founder and president of Live Action, will also be joining us, as well as Dr. Daisy Dowell. She's a pediatrician in Chicago at the Lawndale Christian Clinic and also serves as the chairman of the board for Christian Community Health Fellowship. Now is the time to register because our early bird pricing is only available for a very short time. If you'd like more information and to register, just visit natcon.cmda.org today. One other event that I want to bring to your attention this week is our upcoming webinar series in our partnership with Dallas Theological Seminary on Saturday, November 6th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Join Dr. Daryl Bach as the host, along with guests Dr. Laura Haynes and Dr. Gary Barnes, as they discuss the topic of the misnamed conversion therapy and how it's impacting both healthcare and theology. There will be a time for Q&A with the speakers, allowing you to contribute to the conversation. I hope that you'll join us for this important discussion on identity and gender. If you'd like more information and to register, just visit cmda.org/DTS webinar. As I bring us down to the finish line, next week, I'm joined by Dr. Eric Edwards. He serves on our CMDA Board of Trustees and is a healthcare entrepreneur from Richmond, Virginia. He's got quite a unique story. First, as an identical twin, and with his identical twin founding a company several years ago, and then in 2020, in the midst of the pandemic, founded a second company, which the HHS, Health and Human Services, awarded the largest grant ever to a pharmaceutical company. So you don't want to miss it next week. If you'd like to suggest a future guest for our CMDA Matters podcast, you can just email us at cmdamatters, one word, at cmda.org. And if you like our podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating today and share us on your favorite social media platform. As always, I want to thank you for listening to CMDA Matters. As Dr. Bravada shared during our interview, Christians in healthcare have an obligation to treat the whole person, body, mind, as well as spirit. And we are called to integrate that into our practice in healthcare, whatever the specialty. This new specialty section is a wonderful opportunity to learn more about how to treat patients who desperately need our help and to meet them at the point of their need. Helping those who desperately need help is our calling. It's our mandate, and it surely matters to CMDA and CMDA Matters. Well, I'll see you next week, Lord willing, as we launch into a new month of changing hearts in healthcare to the glory of God.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.